This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn with me, Dashrin Johan. On the 7th of September, Deputy Minister in the Prime Minister's Department, Ahmad Marzuk Shari, claimed that the government plans to draft 4 new Sharia laws, including the Control and Restriction on the Propagation of Non-Muslim Religions Bill. However, in response to the statement by Ahmad Marzuk Shari, de facto Law Minister Wan Junaidi Tunku Jaafar said that none of this has even been brought to the cabinet yet, nor parliament. So it is actually too early to be getting alarmed or to be making noise about this proposal. But what exactly does this proposed law entail? What does it mean for the regular Malaysian citizen if it gets passed? On today's show, I'm joined by Sharia lawyer Nizam Bashir, and I'm going to be asking him about this proposed law and what it would mean to non-Muslims and Muslims if it ever gets passed. We're also going to be talking about the other proposed laws such as the Wakaf Bill and Sharia Court Bill. Welcome to the show, Nizam. How are you doing?
Thanks, Dashan. I'm doing pretty good despite all the restrictions and pandemic stuff that's happening at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. That's all we can do right these days. Do our best and survive despite the circumstances. Now, Nizam, let's start from the top, right? What exactly is the Restriction on the Propagation of Non-Muslim Religions Bill? What exactly is this bill about?
Well, I suppose what gave life to the bill was the decision of the Kuala Lumpur High Court, which ruled that non-Muslims can use the word Allah. Yeah. Now, we do not have clear details as to the bill as of yet. Nevertheless, the title of the bill is self-explanatory, and there has been suggestions that it will be modeled on subsisting legislation from other states, for example, Selangor. Either way, I find it somewhat puzzling, as religion is a state matter, and I do not know why an individual holding a federal post, because Ahmad Marzuk is a deputy minister in the Prime Minister's department, is speaking on the issue, save and unless his remarks are confined in its application to the federal territories.
We don't have details of the bill, right? But broadly speaking, what does the bill in general allow or not allow people to do? What does it seek to accomplish?
I suppose the bill intends to restrict the ability of non-Muslims to talk about their faith, to propagate their faith to Muslims. And that's, as best as I can tell, just going by the title to the bill. Mm-hmm. If you look at the case law itself, there was an individual that had some material that contained the word Allah in it. And I suppose if you fixate on the fact that she's a non-Muslim, therefore it became a case of a non-Muslim purporting to say that she had the right to use the word Allah in whatever material she had with her. If you were to look at it pessimistically, and consider that the material she had in hand was not for her purpose, for her own consumption, I suppose you can say that she was, carrying this stuff for the purpose of trying to disseminate it to other parties. And whether those other parties are Muslims, that's another matter altogether. But I imagine the reaction is based on that. Essentially, that there is a non-Muslim, there's material that contains the word Allah, so therefore this is something that needs to be controlled, restricted in some way. And that's probably whatever that we're seeing now is probably a reaction to that.
Now, with that in mind, what are the laws like currently? Because if we're going off the fact that this law or the objective of this bill essentially is to spread, is to prevent non-Muslims from spreading their religions, what are the laws like currently? Are non-Muslims right now allowed to propagate their religion?
Well, legally, depending on the state that we are looking at, assuming that there is legislation on the matter, for example, like in Selangor, there's a particular enactment on this issue. The answer is no. So non-Muslims are not allowed to propagate their religion to Muslims. And of course, constitutionally speaking, it merely says in Article 11.4 that laws can be passed on the matter to control or restrict propagation of any religious doctrine or belief among Muslims. Yeah. So it is pursuant to Article 11 sub 4, as well as item 1, list 2 of the 9 schedule, that states are purporting to pass legislation to restrict or control the propagation of religious doctrine among Muslims. And as you can see, when Ahmad Mazhab is talking about the issue as well, he's linking it to the fact that there is a case, a recent decision by the KL High Court, whereby non-Muslims were allowed to use the word Allah. So once you piece the two together, then you can see actually that it's a reaction to non-Muslims being able to use the word Allah. I think it is an overreaction on his part, but that's, I suppose, something that we probably need to consider a bit more. And, you know, we can see, for example, that within the Muslim community, there is a concern, all right? But similarly, for in the case of the KL High Court matter itself, for certain communities of Christians in particular, particularly from East Malaysia, it's I mean, as far as they are concerned, where God is concerned, Allah is the only word they sort of, you know, they've used for a long period of time to refer to God in the Bible that they use. So to say that they can't use it, therefore, is impinging on their right to consume or to read a religious text in the way that they're used to.
Now, when we talk about the Constitution, right, what does the Constitution teach us about religious freedom in the country?
Well, of course, there's Article 11.1. Article 11.1 essentially guarantees freedom of conviction, okay? An individual relying on Article 11 sub 1 would be able to say that I've got the right to profess and practice my faith as I see it. And of course, there's this exception to Article 11.1. And that's what the states are, or even Parliament is purporting to rely upon in relation to enacting laws as to propagation. Yeah. So Article 11.4, as I mentioned earlier, it provides that the state or Parliament can pass laws to control or restrict propagation of religious doctrine or belief among Muslims. It's an exception to the Article 11.1 principle, and it's only confined to the Muslim community itself. Right. So the restriction of propagation doesn't extend to a community of non-Muslims.
Right. How much power does Putrajaya actually have when it comes to enacting these laws, laws concerning religion, particularly the Muslim religion, or you know, or is it, like you said, it's under the state's purview?
Well, I think it's a question of appreciating the constitutional framework on legislating matters involving religion. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, where state legislative assemblies are concerned, they can pass laws for their state pursuant to item 1, list 2 of the 9 schedule. As far as Parliament is concerned, Parliament can similarly pass laws on Islamic matters, but only confined in its application to the federal territories. So state legislative assemblies pass laws for state, Parliament pass laws for federal territories. So that's the framework, yeah? And as long as you comply with the usual steps required for the passing of a bill or enactment within the constitution or state constitution, it becomes law.
Right now, how many states in Malaysia have this particular bill or variations of these laws?
Quite a few, but I can't tell you specifically which state has it. I've not quite identified each respective state. But I can tell you, as a matter of fact, in terms of Selangor, which is the most popular state in Malaysia, they do have a legislation to this effect. And I can't imagine that the other states, their legislation would be any particularly different from Selangor. And Selangor, I think, is reasonably comprehensive on the matter.
Right.
it's actually both. It's both a state and to some extent a federal matter, in the sense that at least where state legislative assemblies are concerned, it's a state matter. Okay. But as I mentioned earlier, parliament can also pass laws for the federal territories. So if it is, if there's political will to pass such a law for the federal territory, it can be done. And in terms of the steps required to be taken, as I mentioned earlier, as long as you comply with the relevant provisions for any typical bill, you know, as per the constitution or the state constitution, then that particular bill will become law.
On the show with me today is Sharia lawyer Nizam Bashir. After the break, I'll be asking him about some of the other bills that are proposed, such as the Wakaf Bill, Mufti Bill and Sharia Court Bill. We'll be back with more on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Sharia lawyer Nizam Bashir. And we're talking about the statement by Deputy Minister in the Prime Minister's Department, Ahmad Marzuk Shari, who claimed that the government plans to draft 4 new Sharia laws, including the Control and Restriction on the Propagation of Non-Muslim Religions Bill. So what is the impact of it? Is it in line with the Constitution? That's what we're talking about right now. So, Nizam, I want to ask you about the real implications that a law like this could have. Because, as you mentioned, Selangor has a similar law to this. What are the actual implications towards non-Muslims in Selangor? Because, I'll be honest, as a normal person, you know, you overhear conversations, right? And where people of different religions are, you know, in universities and all of these, they are having open conversations about what their religion is and all of these things, right? And they talk about whether, you know, the ups and pros and cons of their own religion. And they even have these discussions among Muslim people, right, from within between non-Muslims and Muslims and all of these things. Like, I don't think people actively think of this legislation. So what exactly are the actual real-life consequences to Muslims or non-Muslims if a law like this gets tabled and passed?
If you look at the Selangor enactment in particular, as I said, it's pretty comprehensive, right? But I suppose in terms of the policy that maybe the Sharia prosecutors take, it's probably a bit more than just conversations around a table amongst friends, yeah? Mm-hmm. So I don't know specifically how extensive they've relied upon this particular enactment previously in terms of prosecuting individuals about it. But irrespective of you know, my lack of knowledge where the statistics are concerned, I wouldn't want to take the position that parties should be discouraged from speaking about their respective religions to one another. In fact, I've been to a number of interfaith dialogues, interfaith discussions on religion. I suppose if one wants to consider interfaith dialogues as, you know, one of the means to propagate about one's faith to another, then I think fellow non-Muslim participants at those dialogues would certainly be flouting the relevant enactment in question. Yeah, and the reason why I would say that I think one should proceed to or continue to have these interfaith dialogues is I think it's important for us to know the concerns of our respective communities. Yeah, and I think you can't appreciate that or you can't understand what's going on in our respective communities if we don't start talking to one another, understanding whatever concerns that we have in something that's so personal to all of us. Yeah, I can't think of anything more personal than religion. Yeah, so and I think once you start, you know, barricading and, you know, putting up the doors, preventing people from talking about something like this, it's a problem that's probably going to get worse. So which is why I earlier mentioned, I think there's some overreaction in this regard. I think it's important parties should be able to profess and practice their faith sincerely as much as possible. And for that reason, particularly to encourage, you know, empathy and to understand our respective concerns, I think it is important that we talk about our faith, where we can and when we can.
Now, Global Human Rights Federation said, and I quote, "I find Marzouk's statement to be totally against the fundamentals and tenets of our constitution, and it is bound to create disunity and disharmony among Malaysians. This seems to be an obvious attempt to create fear of non-Muslims," end quote. What are your thoughts on this?
I mean, let's firstly consider the background that led to this particular legislation, yeah? The events leading up to the event is the Allah issue, all right? So perhaps he's trying to address the concerns of the Muslim community on some levels. And as a consequence of that, there's an attempt to legislate to sort of restrict the ability of non-Muslims to use the word Allah, etc. Yeah. I can understand the reaction, but as I mentioned earlier, I think it's an overreaction. I've always taken the position that if more people want to use the word Allah to speak about the Almighty, so be it, as long as it is respectful. We are talking about the Almighty after all, and there can be some sensitivities to be observed in that regard. Yeah. And as I mentioned earlier, I firmly believe that we do not have to fear one another. If we use the analogy of faith as being on a mountain and the analogy of God being the mountaintop, I think there's more than one way to reach the mountaintop. So should we be fearful that other people are trying different ways, different paths to get to the mountaintop? I don't think so. I think it's worse when people don't speak about things like this and we fail to understand our respective differences. I think we ought to look at our traditions, yeah? But I think it's also the same for even within the non-Muslim community. I think we ought to look out to our traditions to see how Muslims have been very accommodating about things like this.
Nisam, I'm very curious to get your legal opinion on this particular matter. And it's whether a law like this is in line with the fundamentals and tenets of our constitutions, as Global Human Rights Federation classified it, that they said it's not in, it doesn't follow the fundamentals and tenets. Some people use the phrase the spirit of the constitution. You previously said that there are clauses in the constitution that technically does allow for a law like this to be tabled, and it has been tabled in a number of states. How do you interpret the constitution in this regard? And do you think tabling laws like this in general are in line with the spirit of the constitution?
I think if you look at the spirit of the constitution, it is a document that attempts to accommodate the various beliefs, the various communities that we have in Malaysia. Yeah. So I think if you start with the idea that the spirit of the constitution is one of diversity and one that encourages us to be accommodating in terms of our respective beliefs, I think we need to ask that larger question once again. Do we need this particular law? Is it necessary? Is it essential? Yeah. And I think as long as the use of that particular word is respectful, I think we should be a bit more cautious about purporting to jump into something like this. More so when you keep in mind that, at least where East Malaysia is concerned, there are certain specific guarantees where religious freedoms are concerned. Yeah, I think sometimes when we are looking at it from a purely peninsular perspective, we tend to sometimes be a little bit more insular and, we try and say that, we don't have to be so concerned about the other communities so much. And I think we should observe how things are in play in East Malaysia, consider the guarantees that were sought before those states came into Malaysia, when Malaysia was being formed, and make a decision from that standpoint.
Now, Nizam, according to reports, three other bills are currently being planned. One of it is the Wakaf Bill. There's also the Mufti Bill and the Sharia Court Bill. What can you tell us about these proposed bills?
Darshan, I'm sorry, not much. Because the bills have not been reported on. So journalists like you have to start speaking to Ahmad Marzouk and get more details on him.
Then let's just, you know, talk about what Ahmad Marzouk said about the overall plans that they have. He said, and I quote again, the government has drafted a plan to strengthen Sharia laws, especially in the federal territories, over a period of 5 years, and this is from 2020 to 2025. In this empowerment plan, the government has proposed to enact 11 key Sharia laws, which include the enactment of new laws and amendments to existing laws. What can you tell us about the broader objective of these proposed five-year plans? And what is the potential legal implications onto the regular rakyat?
Well, the notion that one should empower Sharia laws is not necessarily problematic if it accords with the federal constitution. Yeah, if. So whatever the case, it's merely a suggestion at the moment. But I think if you were to ask me, do I think we need more laws where Sharia is concerned? I don't think so. In fact, if you look at the Sharia legislation in Selangor in 1952, it was just one act, and we appeared to have got on even, you know, quite all right even then. So I think we should try to make things easier for people. Nevertheless, if there are any concerns on that front, I think it is in relation to the proposal to enhance punishments pursuant to Act 355. So maybe that's something that perhaps needs to be looked at carefully. The other problem, I think, sometimes when comments are being sought on matters like this, we don't have a clear idea, a clear picture as to what is being mooted. There's some general statements being reported in the media. Unfortunately, we can't. And what makes it a bit difficult for us to sort of give our proper comments on it is we have not seen the specific provisions and proposals that are being mooted. Yeah, so I think I'd rather wait to see exactly what the proposals are before I comment further. But my view always is we seem to be quite all right as is. So why introduce all this new legislations, etc., where Sharia law is concerned?
Now, on that same note, Ahmad Marzouk Shari also said amendments to the controversial Sharia Courts, the Criminal Jurisdiction Act of 1965, are part of this empowerment plan. What exactly is so controversial about this act?
Well, let's start with the phrase, the interesting phrase that you have used. You used the phrase empowerment plan. Hmm. And that, of course, is in keeping with what Ahmad Marzouk himself said. In this empowerment plan, the government has proposed to enact 11 key Sharia laws. The first question I think we should be asking is, are the Sharia institutions not sufficiently powerful in the first place? And I beg to differ. I think the religious institutions are actually quite empowered. So I don't know where this desire is coming from. And that probably, you know, needs to be unpacked when Ahmad Marzouk is perhaps met up next, because I think it's important we understand exactly where the concern lies. And of course, if you talk about what's exactly controversial about the Act, the controversy revolves around the proposals to enhance sentencing where Act 355 is concerned. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, I think things seems to be actually quite fine. Yeah. We have a present 356 formula, 3 years imprisonment, 5,000 ringgit fine, and 6 strokes of the whip. And that particular formula seems to be sufficient. Yeah. Why the need to ensure or to enhance the sentencing? So just as much as any other legislation is concerned, when there's a proposal to enhance punishment, the justifications for it, I think, needs to be there in the public domain as well. So at the moment, I don't see that justification in the public domain. And I think it's important that those statements or remarks are obtained from Ahmad Marzouk first before we can analyze exactly the pros or cons as to the proposal. But as I mentioned earlier, I think, you know, we seem to be doing quite all right where Sharia offences are concerned. I don't see, you know, that there's some large-scale rampant Sharia crime suddenly happening in Malaysia, more so during the time of the pandemic, and all of us are observing the MCO, and you know, we're not going here and there so much. So I don't know where this is coming from. I think if you ask me, frankly, I think it's like the worst time ever to try and introduce a bill or an act to enhance punishment.
All right, Nizam. Before we wrap this conversation up, would you have a final message for us?
Well, I think the most important thing I want to say today probably is, you know, it comes down to this. I see that the government is very keen on trying to enforce things by way of legislation. I think it's important not to lose sight of the fact that sincerity of conviction is a fundamental idea in Islam. You look at chapter 2, verse 256, chapter 10, verse 99 to 100. Those two verses, I think, encapsulates those ideals perfectly. So the present suggestions to legislate and enhance Sharia laws seem unnecessary in my view, and merely provides more prescription where religion is concerned. I'm not saying people shouldn't be observant where their faith is concerned. Be observant by all means, but less prescription, please. Sincerity is an equally important, if not the most important part of Islam.
On that note, Nizam, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
My pleasure.
That was Sharia lawyer Nizam Bashir shedding some light on the proposed control and restriction on the propagation of non-Muslims religions bill. If you missed any part of this conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashran Johan, and this has been Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.